Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, dear listener, and welcome to another episode of Everyone is Hot, the podcast that talks about your favorite stealth sex symbols and the film or TV show that turned you onto them. I'm Michael Stevens.
And I'm Shelley Brooks. And baby, we've got a really fun one today.
Oh my God, I am so excited. We have a super cool guest, a fantastic playwright and fiction writer, Holly Roshan, everyone.
Ooh, hello. Welcome, welcome, welcome. The children are so excited.
Oh, wow.
Holly, do you like children?
Well, on a sexy podcast, the answer is not at all.
Correct. Yeah, that way.
The children are so good. There's, you know, we're in a weird world where you got to define your answer to that question.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I realized after I said it contextually, this is not the place to ask that question.
Yeah.
We're not trying to like trap you here.
Well, but, you know, if you've got a lot of children in a room ready to clap for me, I'll be for it.
She lives with the applause, applause, applause. That's why she's in the theater, darling. Yeah, Holly is an amazing playwright. I have had the privilege of, you know, reading in some of her plays, and or I guess only one of your plays, but a very good play.
There's not that many of them. You know, plays are long and hard to write. One is a significant number of my catalog.
But yeah, so we're...
That's not true. I have 4 or 5, but yeah.
Yeah, you've got like a significant...
I have a few, but you know, yeah. The one that you read in was the one, like, you know, it's like the core heart play. It mattered to me more than a lot of them, so
yeah.
Ooh, I remember that fondly.
So I have no context for this, so I'm very curious to know, like, the general gist
of the play. What Shelley read an early draft, but it was like similar. Was I just hate the TV show Girls, or I did at the time in 2015 or 2016 when I was writing the play, and I just was like, I want to write the play about the like leftist women who are actually doing real things in the world that I have never seen on stage or on screen.
Right.
So yeah, it was like a really Brechtian take on what a sort of like girls TV show might be if it were written by a radical anarchist, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, we had labor, we had race, we had God, we had all the big things.
I'll email you a PDF like after we do this. I would love.
Oh my God, I would absolutely love that. Also, whenever I have money, that's got to get executive produced. Like, I want to watch that show. That's like Gen Z. They love that. That's what the kids are clapping for.
This is such a tangent for not movie related, but I will say the most number of like cold emails I've gotten from people saying they loved my play are like 20-year-olds in college right now. And it is like, that's who I want. You know what I mean? I'm like, I don't really care about all the old dudes who are like, this is weird and says a lot, you know?
Yeah.
So gratifying.
I cannot wait.
I'm so excited. Yes.
Well, we actually have an interesting theater connection in the movie that we're talking about today. So, Halle, who is your stealth sex symbol and what movie are we going to be talking about?
So, my stealth sex symbol, and I don't think she's stealth because I'm like, she's so hot, but
she
it's
is not.
She's hot. Yeah. Like, she's like the hottest 40s actress. But her the movie that we're talking about particularly is Clash by Night, which is based on a Clifford Odets play. And I will, so as I mentioned earlier before we started recording, I sort of infamously don't like movies. I think they're very confusing things. That, like, I like movies that are basically plays, and this movie is literally a play in film, which they used to do a lot. I'm really, you know, pre 50, like early pre 55. Yeah. But so this movie, based on a Clifford Odets play, and essentially it's a really classic love triangle. Mm-hmm. But Barbara Stanwyck plays this sort of mature, over it woman, not your classic femme fatale or her sort of earlier, you know, girl movies. She's like done with men in this movie.
She's had it.
Really, and that's so hot to me.
It really is.
That's it.
Yeah, it's such a sexy character. And like you said, it's not like sexy in the like traditional Hollywood sense of the word, but it's like a true sort of like lived in interesting woman. And I think it's very interesting that in the original production, it was Tallulah Bankhead, everyone's favorite old Hollywood lesbian. Like this is a real like banger of a role for a certain type of actress that is like so hot.
And I think Barbara Stanwyck fucking nails it. Like, she like lives inside of that anger so deeply. Mm-hmm. And it's so like, that sort of like heterosexual rage is just really hot to me. I'm like, be with me instead. Like, yeah.
She has a line. I'm going to butcher it, but it's something to the effect of like home, the place you go when you've run out of places or some shit like that. And I'm like, oh my God.
That's like 20 minutes into this movie. Right. Yeah.
It hits the ground running for sure with her like taking like breakfast shots. Like, I mean, it is.
Yeah, only when I have a cold. Yes.
Well, Michael, for anyone who does not know the story of Clash by Night, could you give us a quick synopsis?
Definitely. May Doyle comes back to her hometown a cynical woman. Her brother Joe fears that his love, fish cannery worker Peggy, may wind up like May. May marries Jerry and has a baby. She is happy but restless, drawn to Jerry's friend Earl. Now,
one
I'm
of
going
our
to
worst.
I'm
IMDb.
Gonna read this one more time and then we'll talk about it. Because we source these from IMDb, and I don't know if it's that I can't read or these are worded strangely.
No, it's not you. It's not
okay.
You.
Okay.
A lot of bad sentences put together.
Okay, then in that case, we're not going to read it again.
We got the gist. We got the main points in there.
Yeah.
Well,
but, I mean, I do love when the IMDb, like, they focus on most of the wrong thing, like, every time.
Yes. Yes.
Like, Joe and Peggy are a very small part of this story, and they are most of the synopsis.
And honestly, if it wasn't Marilyn Monroe playing Peggy, I don't think you would include it in the synopsis
we
at all.
We wouldn't have shit to say about her. When I was, right. I'm so glad that this was a first time view for me, because, and I had no idea who was in it outside of Barbara Stanwyck. So when Marilyn Monroe shows up as like the 20 something, I was like, oh my God, like, what the hell?
I know I saw her in the credits and I was like,
we're talking about, like, not sexy in this movie, you know what I mean? Or at least personally not to me. I'm like, oh, Marilyn, you're so boring.
Oh, see,
you're beautiful, like, we get it, you're so beautiful.
I genuinely really liked her acting in it, and honestly, like, I thought, especially as a contrast to Barbara Stanwyck, I thought that it was really
fair.
And I think that like there are so many actresses of the era, like in 52, that like who would play the sort of ingenue kind of role in that I think would just be so nothing and like so forgettable, and the fact that she has like a presence, I was like, okay, I can see why you are a star, you know.
That's fair. And I will say that whenever she's with Robert Ryan, like, it's weird and like tense in the way that it should be, and that, like, I think that's like very Marilyn, and like Robert Ryan being able to like latch onto what makes Marilyn Marilyn.
Yeah, two very horny actors, and they are,
oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
This is not like, Robert Ryan is another sex symbol of mine, but not in this movie, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Right.
That's a Bad Day at Black Rock episode.
No, definitely not in this movie.
Not in this movie. His disgustingness is accurate.
Yeah, you can smell him through, I think, you know, through, like, Like he's got a scent about him that is it registers.
Yeah. I mean, he is a character that is introduced with the line that, you know, he is a movie projector and he thinks that women's faces are too perfect, that they should be cut up a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, you never wanted to cut up a beautiful woman? Okay. You're like, not that complicated, Jerry. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, on that sexy note, before we get into our main discussion, we like to get a little warmed up with something we call the sexy trivia game. Michael, what is the sexy trivia game?
Well, it's not very complicated. It's just a little something to get the listeners slick for some movie chatting with a little movie trivia. Mm. I will kick us off. The original 1941 Broadway production starred Tallulah Bankhead as May and Lee J. Cobb as Jerry. Ooh, what a name.
Sexy cast. Ooh.
Lee J. Cobb.
Great name, great actor. Halle, can you give us number B?
Number B. Robert Ryan also worked in the original 1941 Broadway production, which ran for 49 performances at the Belasco Theater. He played Joe Doyle, the character portrayed in the movie by Keith Andy.
And I'm going to finish us off with number C. During filming, Marilyn Monroe's famous nude calendar photographs became public. Reporters and paparazzi constantly hounded and surrounded Monroe to the point of becoming a huge distraction for the production.
How inappropriate.
How rude.
That's right. Way to objectify women.
I know. Really fucked up. Especially like knowing the history of those like nude photos that she did them like so early in her career and like did not expect them to be capitalized on like that.
Yikes. Yeah. She was a kid. Jesus. Like, I think, wait,
this was her first movie with like top billing, I think. Even though she was fourth, I think this was like.
Yeah,
check. Very early in her.
Yeah, because I mean, it's
being a star career.
You know? Mm-hmm, yeah, it's like it's certainly very early. Because I'm thinking, like, when was like All About Eve? Because you know, she's the girl sitting on the stairs.
Yeah,
and
she's early. Yeah, that's the. Yeah,
yeah. So I think she had a few. So she started in 47. So I mean, she'd had a few years, but she wasn't really. Oh, and I forgot she was in Asphalt Jungle, like in a small role.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I mean, she had a few before this, but this is her first, I think, meaty, significant role.
Yeah, like yeah, top billing kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's so wild to imagine. Just like, ah, we gotta, what are you doing, guys?
Marilyn, do you have anything to say about your titties?
What do you have to say about them? Tell me about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. It was Saturday. Like, chill the fuck out. I got a job.
I got paid. Like,
yeah.
They're good and people want to look at them and pay me money for them. That's yeah.
I would be so curious what the relationship on set was like between Marilyn and Barbara Stanwyck, because Barbara Stanwyck does not seem like she would suffer any sort of foolishness like posing for nudes.
I know a little bit of the answer, which is, so Marilyn apparently missed her lines constantly, and Barbara was a ultimate pro about it and didn't bring it up once. Mm. She just acted around her.
Wow, that's interesting.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I like did a little trivia research for this.
Oh, yes!
You know, like, they're so, on their approach to everything seems antithetical to each other.
Oh yeah, you know? Polar opposites. Because I mean, you know, Stanwyck is coming out of the studio system and she is, you know, a studied, you know, professional. I mean, she's like in those 30s, 40s movies that she was doing, you're not going to get any sort of like the method, you know, stuff that Marilyn was trying to do. Also, famous Republican.
Well, can we talk about how that's a little bit sexy to me in like a really way?
That's so real, though.
I hate that. This is like the like. Right, if she were straight up progressive, I feel like I'd be a little bit like, oh. And this is like, you know, the line in the movie where Robert Ryan is like, if there isn't a dash of Tabasco, the meat tastes a little flat, or something.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like the politics are like my Tabasco in this.
Yeah.
If we were alive at the same time, I would be so deeply in love with you and trying to convert you to like my side, you know. Also, like, cause she, you know, she was like, she had a shitty childhood. Mm-hmm. She was like an orphan and raised in foster homes, and yeah. I don't know a lot, but it seems like there's a whole lot of abuse and trauma there, and she strikes me as a Republican a little bit in the way that my dad is still a Republican, mm-hmm. and that like he is like, it's that 1940s, 50s thing of like we believe everybody should have a safety net, but you right. should be able to move yourself up from yes. like a certain level. Mm-hmm. And we're just having such a different conversation about like republicanism now that right. they're, it's like, my dad is still having that conversation. She's dead, so she can't have that conversation. I'm like, if you were alive now, mm-hmm. I don't know. We talk about that, you know?
Yeah, I think our dads are on the same.
You haven't met the right woman, you know? I'm like, you're missing the lesbian in your life. You yeah. know? Like, you're having a great woman romance that makes you realize why you're wrong about these things.
Well, I mean, she's also, I mean, who knows if any of this is true? Because, I mean, so much of this comes from, like, Hollywood Babylon, which, of course, is, like, you know, largely invented. But, I mean, she is kind of rumored to have been part of, what was it called? The Sewing Circle that, you know.
Oh, is she? Oh, my gosh, that's happening.
Well, I mean, all of the, that's the thing. It's like, so the Sewing Circle was this like idea of, or like a social group, loose social connections, I guess, of like lesbians and bisexual women in like old Hollywood. Tallulah like Bankhead.
You know, like they had a reason for meeting that was sort of feminine, but like the secret was they were all fucking. You know?
Yeah, like, and it's like not a literal like sewing circle. I mean, it's just right. It's like the web of all the like Hollywood lesbians who fucked each other basically like yeah. and they're like kind of like social connections. But so like Tallulah Bankhead, who was in the original production on Broadway, she was known as kind of like a locus of it. I mean, she was like, you know, one of Hollywood's great lesbians. So
oh my god, this sounds like so many.
I dream of Barbara Stanwyck having a lesbian affair at some point. I'm right? like, I think she deserves that, you know?
Right. And she also
worked so hard for so long.
I can absolutely see her reconciling being a lesbian and being a Republican. Because I also
unfortunately.
And it's like part of, I think, the sexiness of this role too, is that like that kind of like world hardened thing, like that feels like you would then be a Republican.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little like, fuck you, I got mine. Or like, I did what I had to do, you need to do what you have to do.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
This reminds me of so many of the new residents of Bushwick.
But I don't live there anymore, but I believe it.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. It is expensive.
Around yeah, me. Yeah. For the listeners, Hollywood Smart.
I remember when they invented East Williamsburg.
Oh yes, you remember yeah.
that existed.
Oh God, yeah. Okay, cool. Oh, you're with it. Oh, I didn't know you were from Bushwick. Oh.
I was in Williamsburg. I moved to Williamsburg in 2006. And then yeah. like progressively got priced out towards Bushwick, and yes. I finally left. I was off the Myrtle Broadway JMZ in like 2014 or 15, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I moved to the Bronx, and then I moved from New York.
But yeah, I moved from Bushwick to the Bronx to Bushwick again.
Oh, sweet. Where in the Bronx were you?
I was in Riverdale.
Oh, nice. I was in like Montrose, like Fordham area.
Okay,
like,
word.
Yeah,
it was nice. Yeah, like, but when they invented East Williamsburg, that was really something as someone from the neighborhood. I was like, what the fuck is this place?
What the fuck is this like one train stop that they're suddenly doubling the price for?
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
A real dark harbinger of things to come. Right. Yeah. Oof. Well, anyway, the depressing New York real estate and gentrification aside.
I've got a little hardened Barbara Stanwyck in us already.
Yeah.
Well, so Holly, tell us, what is your history with this movie and this character? Like, when did you first see this?
So I saw this movie recently in my life, which means I saw it after I moved to Colorado, which was at the end of 2020. Oh my gosh, I was in a bad place. I was like however jaded we think Barbara Stanwyck is in this movie, like I was there and I was worse, you know. I was like, there is not a man alive that I want to speak to ever again. Like, not, like all
I was
of
on
them
the Zoom
all.
Calls. I remember.
Yeah. Shelly was there. Shelly witnessed them, a lot of this. And like, I feel like I watched this movie not for Barbara Stanwyck, who I do have a history with of like having a deep crush on for other reasons, but I watched it because it was like more of an Odette's connection, I think, for me at the time. It was like, also around the time, Shelly and I and our other friend, who I think is a guest of the pod, Alex Hare.
Yes, we talked about Norma Rae.
We had a fun little movie. Like, so I famously don't like movies unless they are plays. but I needed an escape from the pandemic and from working in the theater, which I had been doing like so intensely for too long. And so we were just watching movies, and then I moved here, and I just like, I don't have any friends here. There's like no social circles here. Everybody is like married and drinks a lot. I was like in bed late at, you know what I mean? I was like probably really fucking stoned, and I just was like, I'm gonna watch the Odette's adaptation, whatever. And I like really the moment that she walks on stage, and or like the moment she sits down at that bar and has her whiskey, and like I think it's that line. It's the Jerry, the sort of like lovable dope who becomes her husband, sees her and recognizes her, and like questions her drinking a shot or whatever, and she's like, only when I have a cold. And it's just like, she's so over this question. You know what I mean? She's so like, get the fuck out of my life. Yeah. Like, who cares if I'm, you know what I mean? You have nothing to say to me. And then she just like walks out, and I just was like, I was like, you are like, oh my God. Like, I don't know. You represent all of the sort of like sexual anger that I have felt in my life. And you're also like really, really independent and confident about that in you. And it was just, like, I just hadn't like been that sort of aroused by like a personality in like a minute, you know?
Yeah.
And so that, and just like, and I do, I really love Barbara Stanwyck. I'll say the movie that turned me on to her probably originally is Ball of Fire.
Yes.
Which maybe we'll come back to you at some point when I say pairings and things.
Yes.
But like, so, you know, I like recognized, I always thought she was beautiful, and I always really liked, she has a sort of like intellectual gravitas no matter what she's doing. And I also, some of the trivia that I found just like in loving her in the last few weeks, I guess she famously said, acting is thinking. And I just think that, like, that makes so much sense to me for her as like an actor. And that's really sexy to me. Like, I you know, the things that I write are for really intellectual women. They have a lot of words in them. They have a lot of like nuance to what the woman is feeling when she's speaking. And I just think that Barbara Stanwyck has always gotten that for me. And like this movie, I think just, it's like not a, I don't think it's a great movie in general. And I actually, it's, I don't know if we'll talk about the ending, but the ending is terrible. The ending of this movie is very terrible. And I think it's making him mad. And it should. It should make you mad. It's a stupid ass ending.
Yeah.
And it is not how the play ends. They just, it was like a Hollywood, we need a happy ending instead of a very sad ending.
It was bullshit. It was just like, wait, this is from another movie. Like,
it's from another movie.
This is not.
It's from a studio executive's mind who was like, well, you can't have everybody die.
We have the Hays Code thing.
Kill him and then murder everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this, I guess this is my biggest question. Like, how is it supposed to end? How should
I've never read. So this, the play script is like unfindable because it was such a flop and like, it's not really published anywhere or whatever. But so this is all hearsay. I know that it ends very violently, but I'm fairly certain that Jerry does murder Earl. And then, and then there's a sort of like his coming to terms with that because he's never hurt anybody before. And like sort of like big dissolution and like all of this like falls apart at the end.
Rather makes than perfect
him
sense.
Not Earl and her being like, I love you anyway. Like, I love you actually. Just kidding. No, never mind. Not all of
that's
that.
Where it felt like it was going. It's just like, ah, damn, this guy's a monster and he's going to kill this other fucking monster. And she's just got to hightail it on out of there.
That's right. And that's not at all how this ends. It ends with them being like, we're in love and everything is fine. We'll just pretend this never happened.
Right? Yeah. Truly insane. It's like unhinged. But I mean, like the Hays Code at the time, it's like you can't have like a mother abandoning her child. If she does, I mean, she would have to be punished by being like killed early. But yeah, it's strange discomforting into like what is up until then, like such a fascinatingly dark and bleak and kind of mean movie.
It's really mean. I like that adjective for this movie.
I mean, and it's like we said earlier, like, you know, the scene where she first meets Earl Robert Ryan, who, you know, is a scumbag in this movie, but I mean, he is like magnetic to watch because he's just so like over, like, just so he seems to have like evil like leaking from his pores.
Like the moment I'm like, you're a serial killer, like you're gonna be a serial killer.
but I mean, it is really interesting that like from the minute he's introduced, I mean, we get her as this like hardened character from the beginning, but like she doesn't seem cruel necessarily, but the minute he enters the picture, like it takes this like very mean turn, like him talking about like cutting up women's faces and like, and even just like the setting of it, like they're in the projection booth in the movie theater and just like hearing the rattling of the projector, like and seeing like the film going, like it feels violent.
Yeah.
So that spoke to you in 2020.
Oh my God, that's so hot. Well, what I also think is really interesting, like that's a great point in general about his character, because what I think is also, again, like the plot of this movie is like really basic. It's like really, really just like woman marries a man because she kind of doesn't know what else to do. And then she meets somebody else and she's more attracted and they have an affair and then everybody's miserable, right? Like, but like the character work for each of the people, I think is real. Like or maybe it's just like acting with a capital A from everybody across the board. But it's like, because what I think is so interesting, even though like Earl, Robert Ryan's like, misogyny towards women is really familiar. What I think is also for me like what got me more was that it's familiar because it's based in a place of him feeling vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like around women. And I think that like when he and Barbara Stanwyck, like when they first kiss for the first, like he sort of, he like has this outpouring of like love and rage at the same time, kind of at her, where he's like, I love you. You're married. What do you want me to do about this? Whatever. And then, you know, something happens and they get interrupted. And then when she comes back in, he's like very mean to her. Mm-hmm. And she flat out said, like, she calls him out. She's like, you're aggressing because you think I've seen you naked for a minute. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, a moment ago, you needed me more than life. And he like can't handle that. Yeah. Like, that's exactly it. Like, that's his whole problem, his whole movie. And he can't handle that at all. And that, like, for me, that's the only thing that maybe a little bit like forgives the ending for me, because yeah. I'm like, I do think that she knows when, if she leaves with this guy, mm-hmm. like her life is awful. Like mm-hmm. she is not yeah. like, sure, she has really good sex that she's not having with Jerry, mm-hmm. but like, that's kind of it. And like, I just like, again, having sort of like fled New York City on like, just like, it felt like an impulse, but it was also like the only impulse that I had left in me that was yeah. like, I have to get out. Like, if I stay in this situation, the person that I am, that I don't like, will be stuck that person. Mm-hmm. And like, I can't do that anymore. Like, that, like, I don't know. I got there with her at the end, even mm-hmm. though I didn't get anything else in terms of like the plot of that.
Yeah.
But for me, it was that. It was like that this man cannot, he is not capable of being vulnerable with women without mm-hmm. also hating them for it. And that is an unsafe, that's it. That's like the deep unsafe situation for all women, you know?
Oh, I mean, I literally thought like this man is going to kill her. Like,
yeah, totally. I was like, yes, you will die at this man's hand somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Well, so to go back a little bit to you talking about, Stanwyck saying that, you know, acting is thinking, something that I find really interesting in her performances is like, so you compared the characters that you write, who are these very intelligent women, but your women tend to be like hyperverbal, and I think something interesting about Stanwyck's intelligence on screen is that she doesn't seem like an educated intelligence necessarily. She just seems like an innate intelligence, and there is something to her like cunning and to her ability to be quiet as well that I think is the same but also manifested in like such opposite ways in, like you said, Ball of Fire and in this film. Like, you know, she's so fun and like full of life in Ball of Fire, and she's so sexy, but she has that like crafty cunning the entire time. And in this one, the intelligence feels so sort of like dark and grounded and like deep in her, you know.
Her one, like, I mean, first of all, this script, because it's Odette's, like, I like the script, the dialogue in the script, like, if you give me a movie that has a bad plot but it has good dialogue, I will go mm-hmm. the whole way with you. And I just think every line that she has is like a little savage and very smart, you know.
I love the line that, like, I would let him turn my teeth into a pocket watch, I think.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
Oh, just that.
Or you impress me as a man who needs a new suit of clothes or a new love affair but doesn't know which.
Yes.
Like, oh my god.
Oh my god. So, God, it's so yeah. good. Well, so if Ball of Fire was the first one that sort of introduced you to her, like, what was your history with that movie? Like, when did you see that?
I feel like I can't even tell you. I feel like that was a movie that came into, like, there are so, like, I was thinking about this, but in preparation for my preparation for the podcast was being like, how did I first find Barbara Stanwyck and why do I love her? And like, I feel like I have been aware of her as long as I've been aware of like this era of movies. Mm-hmm. And like, so when I was a senior in high school, one of our like bullshit classes we got to take was film studies, and we just watched, oh my God. Right. It was like the A that everybody got. And yeah. we watched like the AFI Top 100 or whatever.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And I think, like, I'm sure I think we saw Double Indemnity in there. Mm. And I think that was where I was like, that was like a movie for me where I was like, this woman is fucking hot.
You saw that anklet coming down the stairs.
Oh my God. And just like, again, like there's like that, it's the darkness of that. Like I was an emo kid in high school, and I was like, oh, the
what?
Darkness.
I can't believe it.
As I'm like wearing all black in the middle of summer in Colorado. But the thing about Ball of Fire is like the Barbara Stanwyck thing, I think, got me in that movie like forever mm-hmm. because that's it, like, she's like a wisecracking dame. Every line of hers is solid. It is smart. It is sassy. And like, as a writer, like that movie is so deeply filled with like tricks of language, not just puns, mm-hmm. but like wait, like it almost, the joy of that movie is just like writers getting to write why they love English so much. Yeah. And like that is so fucking nerdy that I am so into it. And I just think like, yeah, I mean, look, she's stunning. Like she's like 20 in that movie. She's so young in that movie. And she is just like, mm-hmm. she's got the legs and she's got the dresses and she's got the hair. And like, she's like a gangster's white girlfriend and she's like got the diamonds to prove it or whatever. But she does retain that sort of I'm from the streets, like earthiness that just she brings to every character. And I think like, I have a different movie preparing, so I guess I can say this now. I would pair Clash by Night and Ball of Fire really well together because I think like I just think they're perfect bookends for like wanting to have sex with Barbara Stanwyck. Yeah. Oh, you're so like sort of pre-jaded and then post-jaded, and I'm like, oh, you just like you age like a fine wine. You're so hot.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Like, so famously, Ball of Fire and The Lady Eve came out in the same year, both in 1941. Yeah. And so Ball of Fire, directed by Howard Hawks with a script by Billy Wilder and Charles Brackett. The Lady Eve is a Preston Sturges film. And it's really interesting to me, like thinking about her intelligence as an actor. And I know that I just said that she's not sort of like necessarily hyperverbal, but it's just that she's not got the sort of like almost like neurotic self-referentiality that you sometimes associate with intelligent characters. Like she does tend to play these like earthier, down to earth characters. But that said, she's got this incredible facility with language. Cause I mean, she like beautifully and perfectly did the dialogue of some of the, like the best and the most important writers of like, you know, the golden age of Hollywood. I mean, if you can do Billy Wilder and Brackett, if you can do Preston Sturges and you can do Odets and you can all do them with the same facility, like that's incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, did she ever win an Oscar for anything? Do we know this?
Oh, I think she did. I feel like it was for like, I mean, as is, you know, usually the case with a lot of these like classic actors, I think it was for like one of her, maybe not lesser films, but I think, you know, not the ones that like we think of as her major ones. Let's see.
I always like, she never, I don't know, like Joan Crawford, like I feel like Barbara Stanwyck for like she, I don't know. I think she's one of the all time greatest actresses that I've ever seen on screen. And like, I do also think, while I don't think she's a stealth sex symbol, I do think like she does seem to sort of get neglected in the pantheon of like golden age movie stars, or at least like the hot women movie stars, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take you over Marilyn any day.
And I think that's true. Cause I mean, she's got like a very, not unusual face, but she doesn't have the, like the softness of a lot of the, both in her physicality and in, you know, her demeanor of, you know, some of the big, you know, leading ladies of that era. Like, I mean, she's not an Irene Dunne, you know, she's got a hardness that I think some men find scary.
And like, I guess, man, I think that probably helps because, you know, she did grow up like on the mean streets of Brooklyn or whatever. Like, I think that there's a lot of like, I don't know, maybe I just project too much on her because I like her so much. But like, it seems like she sort of has a self behind like what she's doing. Like acting feels like, I don't know, a lot of actors, I'm into seeing the person behind the acting as much as I can appreciate like a Daniel Day-Lewis who like disappears or whatever. I like to think that like there's a real human being inside of Barbara Stanwyck, you know?
Yeah. And she was nominated 4 times. She did not win a competitive Oscar.
They gave her
an honorary award in 1982, and she did win an Emmy Award in the 60s for playing some widow. But like, it's but fucking bullshit. It's like some Western.
That she does not have that.
I will say, I assumed that it was going to be for like one of her lesser roles that she got nominated, because that seems to be the trend with a lot of actors. But I mean, this is like a very solid lineup. Stella Dallas, Ball of Fire, Double Indemnity, and Sorry, Wrong Number are the ones she was nominated for.
Yes. So that's a perfect day of movie going.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a quadruple feature I would very much like to go to.
Oof, honestly, we might have to watch all four of them.
I would be so down. So do you find that she, I mean, you mentioned that she's the type of actor that you tend to like. So in terms of like the crushes that you have when you watch movies, do you find that she's kind of the paradigm there?
I feel like in movies and like outside of movies, I feel like I don't have a paradigm, which is very frustrating to me, honestly, because I've always, you know, I said this to my therapist like last week, which I was talking about my relationship issues. And I just, there's something about a person, like an individual human being that gets me, or like there's a person or there's a vibe or something that gets me more than any like physical type or gender kind of thing. So I guess what I'll say is, as much as I have a paradigm, it is that sort of like intellect, like hard intellectual, like confidence that I'm really drawn to in her, that I think I'm attracted to in many other people who maybe don't resemble Barbara Stanwyck in a lot of ways. Or as we were talking about, her sort of intelligent stoicism is really like sexy to me. Like I'm a huge Western fan for a lot of reasons. And like the John Waynes never do it for me, right? Like I'm like fully here for Lee Van Cleef, who like doesn't say anything but like smolders the whole time, you know? Like I love that Barbara Stanwyck has done so many great writers' movies, but I also like, because I'm a writer, like I'm really interested in when actors can take lines or not very much dialogue and then turn them into something really interesting on screen, which I think is much harder to accomplish in the theater. So I just like that it's like a little bit of something that I can never really get to in my own art, or I'm not really interested in pursuing in my own art, like created by this person who is like sexy and articulate and like a little bit removed from me or emotionally unavailable. Like, oh, if you give me an emotionally unavailable person, that's what it is.
I mean, preaching to the choir here.
I have some sympathy in the room, but
yeah. No, it's really true. And I mean, I think that even just like on like Barbara Stanwyck's like attractiveness, like on a physical level, I think is so interesting. Again, to go back to comparing Ball of Fire and Clash by Night, and you know, in Ball of Fire, you know, you mentioned that she's like 20 years old in that movie, which insane. You know, we talk a lot on this podcast about how, you know, we watch older films and we find out the age of the actors, and we're like, oh, they felt like adults, and like most people that age acting now. And I mean, it's, you know, a cultural shift, you know, not just in the movies, but like they feel more like children. But that said, she's got that kind of like young, like juiciness to her almost. And I was really fascinated by like her silhouette in Clash by Night. Cause I mean, she's like the thinnest I think I've ever seen her. That gives her this like very interesting like angularity. And especially when you see her in the like scenes with the baby, like, you know, I think you're used to like in movies seeing like a warmth and a roundness or whatever around children, and like to see her angularity performing these like motherly tasks, what I think was like a really interesting image.
Yeah, I will say just on that, like her costumes in this movie are fantastic. Yes. Like underrated costume design. I want every dress in this movie that she's wearing, and I think that, like they sort of interestingly accentuate that sort of like. And I was wondering a little bit. It's Robert Ryan is so tall. I was like, are you also trying to do a little bit of like, you know, visual adjustment here, because there's a lot of disparity? But like, her physicality in this movie. Maybe this was on IMDb, but like I was reading reviews for this, you know, user reviews, which is a bad idea. But some fucking guy said, she's in her 40s, I think, in this movie. And he basically said she's too old to play this part. And I was like,
bullshit. What the fuck? Almost
every man in this movie is 10 years older than her. Like, shut up. It was just sort of an interesting moment again to sort of see what other people could be like, that sort of objectification of what somebody would be expecting to see if there was a woman in a movie who is the object of a love triangle that became so passionate, you know? Yeah. Like, you can't, like, you shouldn't look like Barbara Stanwyck, you shouldn't be angular, you should have curves, you should whatever the sort of stereotype would be, people really, I guess, look for that, you know? Meanwhile, I'm like, you're so hot because you're not that. That's like not what I thought.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you mentioned the costumes, and it is interesting how many scenes we have of her like dressing and undressing, and we get this sort of, you know, obviously like there are limitations for the time when the movie was made, but like we get these like interesting little peeks at like the potential of nakedness.
Can I say, maybe this is something that I noticed, but maybe this is a code thing that you guys, because I thought it's really interesting to me that the first time, so she like Jerry, who is the lovable dope, like really wants to go out with her, and she's kind of ambivalent about it, but like the very first time that he comes to her house to pick her up, she comes out like half dressed, she's buttoning up her sweater, and I was like, that is like I was like, is this I don't know. There's a lot there that I have questions about in terms of the making of a movie. Like, am I supposed to read into that? Am I not supposed to read into, like, you know what I mean? I don't.
Oh,
know.
I think absolutely. Yeah.
But
I mean,
but also like really, yeah, really forward for a woman who like is really saying no, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And like, and I think that it does such those little details like that go such a far way in like communicating about their relationship. Cause I mean, Paul Douglas, who plays Jerry, like you say, he's like this big lovable oaf, and like he, yeah, you get that tension immediately. Like when you know that this like kind of shy man is standing there as she is buttoning up her top in a way that feels, even though it's such a small gesture, it feels so enormous.
Yeah.
Yeah. You understand why he had like, you know, probably should have killed the guy, didn't kill the guy because it's 1952. But
yeah. You know, yeah. We all know that he really did, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if I don't like an ending of a movie, I just make up my own ending, and then that's
I like that. I like that approach. That's the approach that I took with this one.
Yeah.
He's dead.
Yeah.
They fucking
we
got
all
him.
Know. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like, you know, she was a pretty relatively early crush if you first saw her in high school. But I mean, do you remember the first time you saw someone in a movie and like truly like fell for them?
You know what? I will say, you guys have already done this. And so I feel like I'm going to, but I'll, like, I think it was Keira Knightley and Bennett like Beckham. I feel like that movie just like, that was the movie where I just was like, these people are like, I was like, that's also a movie where I'm like, I don't know how it ended. I don't care how it ended. They ended up together. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I feel like every queer woman does that with that movie. We're all like, mm-hmm. we know what happened. That was like, I probably went to that movie. Like, I remember seeing it, I think, with my mom in like our like little like indie cinema in mm-hmm. I was in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And I also, and it was like one of the, that movie theater was next to the mall, and it was like one of the very few places that I was allowed to go by myself relatively, like age 13 or 14, I think. Nice. And like, I went to that movie by myself so many times. Like, I was like, don't do that again. Like, what are these hot ladies doing playing soccer? Like, oh, and like, I think I was like, because I came out as bisexual in high school. Like, I was, like, relatively comfortable with my sort of general pansexuality relatively early. But that was that was a movie where I was still not totally sure what was going on with why I liked it so much. And then, the reason that I like it so much is Keira Knightley in a sports bra. And, like,
yes.
I don't know what to tell you, you know? Like,
that's so funny. Yeah, because I remember, like, all of my, like, little friends having such a crush on, what's his name, Jonathan Rhys?
Oh, my God, I know. I think he's so, I think he's so ugly.
I know. I was, like, not into him. I was, like, yeah, I would be, like, with them being, like, yeah, he's so hot. And, like, all I could think about was, like, her washboard abs.
Oh, my God, that's it. Like, oh, the hip bones. Ugh. Do you think, like, I have a fondness for, like, types of all kinds. But, like, I do, like, I guess maybe in terms of, like, a particular person that I am always like gonna look at whether I want to or not is like a sort of like lanky, tall, like lean woman, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that again in Class by Night, Barbara Stanwyck, she is thin, like she's noticeably thin, and I'm a little I'm a little worried about you.
Yeah.
But I'm also like, oh, you're so hot. Like, can I take care of you? Like, can I feed you soup? Like, can we
Yeah, because I mean, it is so striking, especially like, you know, seeing those types of bodies on screen, just like seeing the angles that they can make. It's like,
oh, a little like masculine energy. Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
it's really cool. And like, I think especially like thinking about in Clash by Night, some of the photography in the movie is like so beautiful with that like black and white. And like sometimes it does feel like a stage play. So it feels almost expressionistic sometimes seeing her silhouette like against the backgrounds of these sets. Like it and like the sort of like, yeah, the, all the like lines and the angles to it, like I think really contribute to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good one. Oh, God. Bend It Like Beckham. That was...
God, you know, for women of a certain age, we just, like, it fucked us up on a lot of levels.
Yeah,
on a lot of levels, because I definitely was never going to have that stomach either, and that became a goal for a long time.
Yeah, then it was like, do I want to be you, or do I love you, like, or both, that's, or like, yes.
I think that's the constant dilemma of every crush on the show.
That's the crush, right? It's like, I just want to consume you. Like,
Yes. Oh, exactly. Oh, my gosh. Well, so you've said that you're not... sorry, Michael. What were you
going to
say?
No, I was just going to say, like, I saw Bend It Like Beckham as an adult, but the movie that did that same thing for me was Remember the Titans, for reasons I didn't understand, because I was like, oh, we're in a locker room, a place I'm not usually... a lot in this movie, and we got fucking, it's like, it's the most attractive I've ever found, like Ryan Gosling or like any of those guys, but Yeah, a lot
was
of
he
it
was he Sunshine?
I believe it was either him or this dude Kip Pardue. There's two blonde haired white guys. it might have been him, but there was he did kiss a guy on the lips in that movie. Yeah.
And I always think of that Sunshine.
Yeah, Sunshine. Like he's so coded in that.
But. So coded. Oh, it's so good. Oh man, yeah. Speaking of theater, did you know Taylor Adamson, the playwright?
I don't think so.
Okay, a friend of mine who was an assistant on an Annie Baker show, but White Coach was one of the main characters in it.
Oh my god!
The entire time I was watching, I was like pointing at the stage, being like, "White Coach."
Oh, White Coach! Ah, I love White Coach, whose name is. It escapes me.
Yeah, he's like a big like audiobook guy, I think, as Will well. Patton. Will Patton.
I was going to call him not Kevin Costner.
He's White Coach slash not Kevin Costner slash apparently he was like a merchant marine or something for a while. Fascinating guy. So
okay. I love when you work in the theater and then suddenly like some random like the film actor from like your childhood shows up in front of you, like you're like, wait, you're the guy in the thing.
Yeah,
right.
You're doing a play. That's so fun.
It's thrilling. Oh my gosh. Well, so we've got, you know, the Stanwyck, the Knightley, like kind of similar types. I mean, are there any other like particular movie performances as a non movie lover who happens to know a lot about movies? Like you say you don't like them, knowledgeable.
I know, like I like the movies that I like, I really, really like. Yeah. But I haven't seen a new movie in like years. Like I could care less about Barbie or Oppenheimer. Like I really like I don't know, maybe I like film or whatever. Like I find the things that I like and then I really like them and then I love to talk about them. I guess I could name a lot of them if we weren't like talking about it right now. Every time I think of it, like a movie that I'm like, oh, that person. Oh, I will say I do have one other one, but I might want to save it for the end because it's in my pairing.
Okay.
The other one that's a big one for me is Lee Van Cleef in like all of the spaghetti westerns, like all of the Sergio Leone movies. Again, there's something about the like a little bit of an awkward face and like a deep like stoic demeanor, and like he's always the good guy even if he's the bad guy, even though he's the bad guy when he's the good guy. You know, you're just like, oh my god, I'm so conflicted. I love you.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
I think the Western genre in general is underrated and like overlooked these days. I'm like pushing for a Western comeback.
We're gonna have you back and talk about Westerns.
Oh, I cannot wait.
But what? Sorry, Michael.
I cannot wait to talk about.
Oh yes! Oh my god! Bring me. We'll talk about that one day. New westerns are bad, but old westerns are bad.
Yeah.
Agreed. Well, I think that this is a perfect segue to talk about our pairings. So, you know, as the listeners know, we like to take the movie that we're talking about and either pair a movie or a TV show, now open to TV shows, that we think they'd either make a good double bill, or we think they could enlighten each other, or we think it would just be something that someone who enjoyed this movie would also enjoy. So you interpret that however you like, but you have said that you have been thinking about this for weeks, Halle, so we'll start with you.
Great. Well, I will say, I think Ball of Fire, as mentioned, and this movie are perfect bookends, and that would be a great choice.
Yeah.
But I also, the actual choice, I think, is Golden Boy, another Clifford O'Death adaptation with Barbara Stanwyck in it. And I think that, first of all, it's a much more faithful adaptation to the play than this movie is. And I think her part is not great in that movie or in that play. Like Myrna Loyd is not, she's like not great, but I think again, Barbara Stanwyck is able to bring so much behind what little she has to give. And it's another movie slash Odette's play where classically like the woman is 10 steps ahead of everybody else and like none of them have anything except for she tells them how to get it, and like, you know, she's the orchestrator of everything that happens, even though she's the one sort of like waiting for a man to give her something in return, you know. So I think that's a really interesting, that's gonna be my pick. And then my other self sex symbol in that movie is Lee Jacob, because I think Lee Jacob in that movie particularly as I've seen this play so many times. What's the William Holden? Oh my god, what's the Golden Boy's name? Oh my god. It's Hamoud is the Lucy Cobb character.
Joe, right?
No, it is Joe. Is it Joe? It's Joe Bonaparte. His last name is Bonaparte. Yeah, okay. Anyway, so he plays Joe Bonaparte's father, and I think on Broadway he played Tom Moody. Lucy Cobb has been in this play forever, but just that particular character in Lee J. Cobb is so warm and like artistic and open and loving, and just like as the patriarch of a family to display that. And he like, it's just, I'm like, I want to marry you. Like, you're a good husband. Like, you are the man that we have not seen in any of these movies being a good person, you know?
Yeah.
And that is like so beautifully sexy to me. So that's my choice.
Oh, that's really good. I also famously am a big fan of the musical adaptation of Golden Boy that Sammy Davis Jr. was in on Broadway.
So many times, but I have never seen. Is it actually good, Shelley?
It's not like good, quote unquote. I love the cast recording because Sammy Davis Jr. is great on it. I mean, he was too old for the part. I mean, he also Sammy Davis Jr. like playing a boxer. Like, come on. Yeah. I mean, he's like a featherweight, I guess.
He can do it.
What do they call them? Like bantamweight. It's a bit of a stretch. And apparently, like the production was kind of a mess, but it was one of the like early like interracial couples on in like a Broadway musical. And there are a couple of songs that are like genuinely beautiful, and he sounds incredible on them.
Okay, cast. I'm all about cast recordings. If I don't have to watch the whole musical,
I'll send you like the songs that you should skip to on it. Cool. Like there are a couple of good YouTube videos of him singing some stuff from Golden Boy. Yeah, that's really lovely. But yeah, that's a great choice. I love that. And like Golden Boy, underrated movie, I think. Underrated, I think, director Ruben Mamoulian, I think is how you pronounce it, who did like Queen Christina. He did the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde with Spencer Tracy. He did Love Me Tonight. So it's
one.
Yeah, definitely one worth checking out. Great choice. What about you, Michael?
So I was grappling with this because I thought of like, all right, what's like every movie I know about you know, a woman starting over or you know, demonic men, brutal alienation. And I thought about Blue Velvet, but that felt wrong. And then I thought about Chungking Express because this movie is kind of like two movies in the sense that there's, you know, there's two very clear halves of it. Feels like two separate movies. But that doesn't feel right. And then I thought of Unmarried Woman, which does not match the vibe at all. And
I could see that though, actually. I think that's interesting.
But I think the pairing that I would want to go on record as saying is Red Desert, which was a movie. Yes. A movie I watched in early in the pandemic. I was very isolated, very much by myself and in my feelings, and just I wanted to feel something. And so it's Michelangelo Antonioni, 1960s, an industrial area. The synopsis that I pulled describes Monica Vitti's character, Juliana, as unstable. But she is not. She's just, you know, coping with life. And she starts an affair with a coworker at the plant that her husband manages. I believe he's played by Richard Harris, who I think is low-key very attractive in a way that nobody talks about. Because, you know, I feel like most people think of him as fucking Dumbledore when, like, you know,
They don't know he was like a little Irish bruiser.
They don't know. They don't fucking know.
It's harder than that.
But the movie is dreary as fuck. And it met me where I was kind of navigating the pandemic pretty early. So I would definitely recommend this one with Red Desert.
I love that. Yeah.
I'm gonna watch that movie for sure.
It's a good one.
That's my adjective for movie.
Well, I think I went in a similar vein to you, Michael, in choosing something that is deeply bleak, but also I think has some interesting parallels in the plot. I actually texted Halle about this as I was watching Clash by Night. This is one that I had heard about for years and had never gotten around to watching until pretty recently, and now I'm completely obsessed with it. It's on the Criterion Channel. It's called Cutter's Way. It's directed by Ivan Passer, who is like a big Czech New Wave director, but it's one of his American movies, starring Jeff Bridges and John Hurd.
I love John Hurd.
He is truly incredible. Like, I mean, he's like blowing the doors off in this movie. Like, he's not like being subtle in this film, but he is incredible. And also Lisa Eichhorn is the third lead in it. And she is she's mind-blowingly, like, her performance is incredible. She's so beautiful. It's maybe one of my favorite performances I've seen in recent years. But it's like a 1981 film that definitely feels like a 70s movie. It's like truly just kind of like the
early
tail
1980s.
End. Yeah, it's the tail end of the 70s in this one. It doesn't feel like an 80s movie at all. But it is like a sort of neo-noir. It's a California noir, which I love. I love the contrast of, you know, the California sun and these like, you know, dark ugliness underneath. But the thing that really makes it an interesting parallel to Clash by Night for me is that I love movies about fucking and cucking. And that is what this movie is mostly about. Fucking and cucking. It is a sort of like love triangle. So the main story is that, you know, Jeff Bridges is this kind of, you know, he's never looked like more handsome. He's beautiful in this movie. But he's this kind of like layabout, kind of like going nowhere guy who like works on a boat, and his you know, friend is this guy Cutter, who is like a Vietnam vet who has like had a leg, an arm, and an eye blown off. So now he's like this dissolute alcoholic who just like spends his days like, you know, going out and drinking and then like crashing his car into his neighbor's car and like and making trouble for his wife. And then Lisa Eichhorn plays his wife Mo, also an alcoholic who just sits around the house all day like drinking vodka. But there's like this really interesting dynamic between the three of them where like, so Cutter and Mo are married, but Bone, Jeff Bridges, it's like he, you know, is kind of lives at their house.
Yeah.
And it's like very much understood that he and Mo are fucking, and like they kind of acknowledge it, and like Cutter kind of laughs it off, but he also is clearly like furious about it. Like, it's just a great like weird uncomfortable love triangle where like it's kind of like in this movie, like, you know, Jerry is like this big oaf, and then Robert Ryan is like the, you know, the hunky guy. God, and like, you know, Jeff Bridges is so beautiful, and then John Hurd's character is all like mangled and fucked up and like drunk, and like, and he just, God, he knows his wife is like fucking this beautiful guy, but the beautiful guy is also his best friend and like his only friend. Like, it's a great,
just like the
CIA. Yeah. It's a great movie of like exchanged glances and of people like just kind of leaving the room, and then people silently looking at each other like, well, he knows, but like, we are gonna fuck.
I cannot wait to watch this movie.
I when you texted me, I went to look it up, and then I was like, I don't have time before this, but now I definitely am gonna watch it.
Yeah,
it's really good.
I hate both of these men.
Oh, you're gonna hate them even more when you see the movie, because I mean, they're both like big pieces of shit. Like, they are like, everyone in the movie is terrible except for Mo. Mo is just sad, and like, it's a bleak movie, but it is also so good.
I think, with the exception of Chungking Express, I hate every man that's been mentioned in this pairing section in the movies in this pairing section. God.
Fair enough. Well, man, I think we got some really good pairings here.
I agree. This is a great movie, Dan.
Yeah, seriously. I know. I've got so many things to watch and rewatch. But
we're gonna be so sad at the end of this.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh, relationships are nothing. Nobody matters. Love isn't real. Right.
Forget it.
That's right. You know, finding the truth.
Well, you know, now that we've like, you know, gotten our bummer thoughts about relationships out, let's do something a little more fun, which is a little quiz. As always, this quiz is incredibly stupid. So in this quiz, this is called The Quiz by Night.
Love it. So, yes, love the title.
Thank you. So these are all movies that have the word night in the title.
So love it.
I will give you a description of the movie, and you have to tell me what is the title of this film. And just buzz in by saying your name, and whoever gets first.
Oh boy.
Go ahead and guess. All right. I tried to make it not too hard, too bad, but we'll see.
<All right. laughs> We'll see how, you don't know how stupid I am.
I know 17 movie titles. We'll see how this goes.
All right. So these are all movies with the word night somewhere in the title. All right. Okay. Number one. If you thought you wouldn't like this film, your defenses will fall like the walls of Jericho when you see the leading lady's traffic-stopping ankle. Walls of Jericho. It's a line in the movie. Huh. She puts out her ankle and stops traffic.
Oh my God. Is this a Claudette Colbert movie?
It is.
Oh my God. I've seen this. I know that. I actually really like this movie. What the fuck is it called?
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, Claudette Colbert, Clark Gable.
That's right. I really, really like this movie. Oh my god.
It's got knight in the title.
I know that.
I'm like so horribly underqualified for this. So I'm actually just going to be making up.
I can describe many scenes in this movie. Yeah.
Describe the entire thing from start to finish, just without the title card.
The scene where they're sharing the motel room for the night, mm-hmm. and they have to like pull the clothes up, and then
it's the walls of Jericho.
Nighttime, into the night, ankle night.
Ankle night.
Yeah, it's like a really short title.
Okay, I'm going to give this one to Halle because I think that knowing literally everything about the movie except the title counts. So this is 1934's It Happened One Night.
It happened one night. Okay.
Oh, thank you.
Point to Halle. Oh, I don't know. What? Did they?
Is there a...
He was asking if there was a remake, but I think this is just kind of like the...
I don't think there ever should be. That movie is perfect.
But it's also just kind of like the ur-romantic comedy. So I think that like it's just... You know, a man and a woman got stuck on a trip together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like every romantic comedy trope started in this movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, no,
it's so good though. It really is. I haven't seen it in a very long time, but I used to really love that movie. Yeah.
It's a blast. Yeah, no, that one's really fun. Okay, number two. Okay. In 1969, everyone be talking at you about this X-rated new Hollywood classic. Everyone would be talking at you.
In what year? Say that again. In
1969.
And it's X-rated.
X-rated.
Everybody's talking. Wow, wow.
Midnight. Is this Midnight Cowboy?
Yes, Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen that one, but I think
it's really good.
I haven't seen that one. But this, this is a Shelley. This is a Shelley classic, right?
This is a Shelley classic.
This is Good. Is John Voight in this?
John Voight is in it. Oh, yeah. They're so sad and gay. Oh,
okay. Yeah, this is the Shelley classic.
New York is so dirty in it. It's great.
They're so sad and gay.
Amazing. Like, on the list.
And that was a bit of a trick question because it was midnight rather than just night. So very good job, Michael. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, that was smart.
So smart. All right, number three. Well, you can tell by the way he uses his walk that the main character of this movie,
it's Saturday Night Fever.
That's correct. Yeah, I was going to finish with has an elevated temperature for a specific day of the week.
Oh no! This is smart. I don't know why you would say this is dumb.
Yeah, these are solidly smart questions.
These are smart questions. You are clearly an Oxford-educated human being.
Yeah, a movie aficionado educated by Oxford.
Yeah, this is what my student loan debt is for.
This is what it's all about.
Honestly, it's not, you know, what else, what better use could it go to?
I mean, it is a creative writing degree, let's be real.
Look,
about the most practical use.
We got 15 more years left.
Like, I'm learning how to garden. I'm like, my master's degree means nothing.
Yeah. I went to school for communications. What? A joke.
You're doing that right now. You're doing it so good. You're communicating so good.
Thank you so much.
We are understanding and comprehending everything you're saying, so you're doing great.
Oh.
Beautiful. All right, so it's 2 Michael, 1 Halle. Number 4. Shelley Winters sleeps with the fishes in this film from a one-time director / iconic actor starring one of Hollywood's great potheads. This is a movie from, what year is this actually? Let me see. I think it's 1955.
One-time director.
Shelley Winters.
Name movie where Shelley Winters sleeps with the fishes.
She ends up in a car at the bottom of a lake. Lillian Gish, the famous silent film actor, is also in it. Only film by this director, writer, or the actor director played Quasimodo famously.
Oh, okay. So this is a line.
Famously. That's like a, I don't know. For me, that's an awesome.
He famously was ugly.
So this is a Lon Chaney thing?
Charles Laughton.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, love, hate on the knuckles originated in this movie, or on the fingers.
I feel like the name of the Simpsons episode is Camp Fear. Related to the love, you know what I mean? This movie.
Yeah, there are some references to this movie in the Cape Fear episode of the Simpsons.
But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know the actual. I couldn't tell you the actual movie.
All right, this one I think I'm going to have to give to you guys. This is Night of the Hunter.
Oh, I was not going to get this. There was no way. There was no way in hell.
This is one. Holly, I think you especially would love this one. It's really.
I know references from it. And when you say the title, I'm like, that's a title that people have told to me a few times. But I have not.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's one of my favorite movies. It's like such a shame that Charles Laughton never made another movie because it is.
Is it on Criterion? Is it streaming?
I think it is. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool. No, this is my. Because it's. Oh, my God. It's like a little like gothic fairy tale. It's like. Oh, it's beautiful. And yeah, and one of the Clue's famous pothead, Robert Mitchum, known for smoking the ganja.
I really like Robert Mitchum. I like him more.
I didn't know
now.
That at all. Oh.
He is great. Yeah, he got arrested many times.
he can be a dream blunt rotation. You know what I mean? I think Robert Mitchum would be so fun to smoke with.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God. He'd be amazing.
Gosh.
All right, our last.
I will say just one more tangent. I really, Robert Mitchum and Robert Ryan are in a couple movies together, and they are always very good. Like, I can't think of titles now, but I can find them. And they're there's one where Robert Mitchum plays like an army man returned home and like catches Robert Ryan, who is a murderer. Like, I don't know. It's good.
Oh, this sounds very familiar. Oh, God, that's going to kill me.
I know. He's here. Anyway. That's fine.
Yeah. After we finish recording, we'll be Googling.
I'm already Googling. I'm like, oh my God, adding to my Letterboxd list as we've been talking this whole episode. I was like, there's some really good shit here.
I love it. Okay. All right. Fifth and final question.
Lord.
This movie is about a certain spooky dochter on her way to a certain place at a certain time. She's spooky. Spooky. It's in black and white. It's a relatively recent movie. Dochter, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, is the key, I think.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Certain place and a certain time.
Yeah, she's like a...
A girl walks home alone at night.
Yeah.
That's correct.
I was like, again, I know the movie. I 100% knew the movie, and then I was like, I gotta get this title, though.
Yeah, and Minnie, a long title in this one.
I will say, you did pronounce it right, and that was like a very helpful
clue. Yeah.
Nobody remembers like actually what that movie's about.
Right? Spooky vampires, listening to old records. I think that's about it.
Just chilling, just vibes.
Yeah, sitting on a 50s car.
Vibes. Yeah. I would say most Persian movies are 80 to 90% vibes.
Lots of vibes movies, yes. Well, guys, that was beautiful. And you are tied. So I guess you're both brilliant movies with the word night in them scholars.
Yeah. I love ending with a tie.
It's beautiful.
As a person who loves participation medals and
100%. Trophies. Oh my God. Or like, my anarchist impulse is like, we all win.
Exactly. It's like, hey, we're all here. We're all here.
Fine, you win too.
It's fine.
That is beautiful. And on that note, Halle, where can people find you? And do you have anything interesting coming up that they should look out for?
Well, I don't have anything coming up because I have to rebuild an entire body of work having left the theater recently. But I will say, just because this seems like the pod for it, I'm working on a series of romance novels that I'm going to be very excited about, set in a fictional town. But also, right, like the labor organizers here who can't make more than $15 an hour. Like, so I'm excited about that. Hopefully next year we'll have some news on that. But in the meantime, I'm really only left on Instagram these days. You can find me at Halle Rochen, but... You know, if you want to see a lot of pictures of my garden and my dog, that's about it.
Oh my God.
And they are great pictures, to be honest. And they will make you want to leave New York.
I love my garden and my dog. I think everybody should see them. But writing stuff next year. I'll keep you posted.
Oh my God. Please do. This sounds like my shit. And it also sounds like my mom's shit. And I got to tell her about.
This is the secret. Is like, we all really like romance novels in secret. And then we start talking about it. And we're like, wait, we all really like this. Like, my mom really likes this. My dad really likes everybody's like a little into this. So.
They're fucking fun.
I'm a little tired. Like, I spent so many years in the theater trying to make a difference. You know what I mean? Like, say something, and, like, have a message. And I'm like, the message is we all need to get our shit together about climate change because this is happening and like there's nothing else that matters. And so let's read romance novels in the meantime while we learn how to garden.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, well, speaking of, you should also look up Holly's plays. They are fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
There are no shout out to my old employer who doesn't exist anymore, but I have a couple of plays published by Drama Display Service that you can buy there. Or, I'll send you PDFs. I don't mind.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I cannot wait.
Either way, read them. They are great.
Thank you. Yes. And this was, you guys, this is so fun. I love talking. I think back to romance novels and people who are hot are actually the conversations that we need to be having these days.
Yeah.
Because we're very sad and we're very tired. And crushes are the only fun thing left, maybe.
Yeah.
Listen, this is why we exist. Because
I'm a full-on supporter, acolyte of everyone is hot.
Oh, my God. Oh, this is, I'm reading your play titles right now and I'm over the fucking moon for...
I'm over the moon that you're over the moon.
Yeah.
Oh my God, this was so fucking fun. We are definitely having you back to talk about Westerns. I cannot wait.
Oh my God, yes, I can't wait too. Yeah, that'll be so fun. And you guys are fully invited to Durango, Colorado, where speaking of Westerns, Louis L'Amour wrote all of his books here.
Oh my God.
It's an old West town, you know what I mean? We've still got some of those vibes. So yeah, come visit. Anytime we can do a, pod from... destination. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes. On site in Durango. Oh, let's go.
Just when everyone is hot on site in Durango one day.
Literally, we have to do this. I'm booking my ticket.
That's right. We're traveling. Yeah. You can write it off on your taxes. This is
true.
Oh
my God. This is true. Oh my God.
More stuff
expense.
We got to be writing off on our taxes.
We're not writing off anything.
We're not writing enough
off
on our taxes.
Oh my God. Everything, right?
Yeah.
If you guys drank coffee today, you should write this off as a business expense.
Oh my God.
We got to form an LLC. We got to.
Oh my God. My weed that I smoked right before this. I got to write all of it off.
Yeah. It's the era of grifters, you guys. Get in on this.
I've been grifting.
We are behind the curve.
You've been grifting. All right, all right.
I've been grifting.
Consolidate your grifts,
But this sounds like a good grift.
This is a good grift. Oh my God. Well, this was absolutely delightful. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank
Michael,
you, yes.
Where can people find us?
So y'all can find us on all social media at Everyone Is Hot Pod. That's every number one is Hot Pod. And wherever you can rate us 5 stars. Less than that, we'll get you canned.
We'll punch your lights out.
We'll punch your fucking lights out.
Beautiful. And what should people do, Michael?
Stay horny.
Horny.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.